From the rail to your radio, this is the Horse Racing Radio Network.
But it's War of Will coming down to the 16th pole in front. In front by 2 lengths late. A late charge from Longshot Everfast to the inside two, but nothing stood in his way. War of Will won the Preakness.
Bricks and Mortar bumps with March to the Arch, nonetheless closing in with 2.5 lengths to make up and a 16th to go. It's Curbon in front, Clyde's Image. Bricks and Mortar finding stride late in the game, and Bricks and Mortar's up in time.
From our Jimmy John's of Lexington studios, welcome to the Equine Forum, presented by Red Brand Fence.
Tacitus is closing through an opening down toward the rail, into the final 16th. It is Tex in front. Tacitus on the inside is second. He's trying to come and get Tex. The Ortiz brothers, Tex on the outside. Tacitus at the rail, and it is Tex and around Ortiz in the Jim Dandy.
And Vino Rosso edging away from Gift Box. He's coming into his own. And Vino Rosso at age 4 goes on to win the Gold Cup at Santa Anita.
Now, here's Mike Penna and Jude Feld.
Good morning once again, everyone. Welcome to the Equine Forum. Rise and shine. We are on the air once again. This show, of course, presented by Red Brand Fence here on the Horse Racing Radio Network. Mike Penna, Baron of the Backstretch, coming to you from our Jimmy John's of Lexington broadcast studios right here in the heart of the Bluegrass, Lexington, Kentucky. And happy to have you with me for the next 2 hours. I just kind of wish that the horse racing industry had given us a little something to talk about here this morning. Kind of a slow news week, wouldn't you say? Yeah, anything but. Let's start here. The first 4 days of the 13-day Keeneland September yearling sale are now in the books. And that includes 340 yearlings who sold in book one, which is the first 3 days of the sale. For those of you who aren't familiar with the way that horse sales work, there are various books. Book one, typically the book that will feature the highest pedigrees, the horses with the best conformation, in theory, the horses who are supposed to turn out to be the best racehorses. And over the course of those first 3 days, Monday, Tuesday, and Wednesday of book one, the numbers were outstanding. Gross sales of more than $160 million, an average price of nearly $472,000. You had 20 yearlings who sold for $1 million or higher, seven of those bringing more than $2 million. And the RNAs, the buyback rate, less than 19%, pretty solid. You had another $1 million yearling yesterday on day number 4, and so that makes it 21 horses who have now sold for $1 million or higher at this Keeneland September sale. You want to play this game? Yeah, you better bring it. Well, don't worry. If you don't have that $1 million, $2 million budget, all you have to do is just wait a little bit longer because the prices will continue to trend downward over the course of the next 9 days of the sale. Happens, of course, every year. That's the way it works. So for the beauty of this game is that, yeah, it's called the Sport of Kings. You don't have to be a king to play it. You can wait, find something in your budget later on in the sale over the next several days. And the great part about it is that that horse can turn out to be a champion, can turn out to be a Kentucky Derby winner. That's what I love about the sport of horse racing. So cool. It's like owning your own franchise, your own team. You can't go out and buy into the Dallas Cowboys or the Pittsburgh Steelers, but you can do it in horse racing. You can own your own star, your own team. The star of the show, undoubtedly, was the record $8.2 million filly by Triple Crown winner American Pharoah, a Triple Crown winner not involved in controversy this week. I'll talk more about that in a minute. A half-sister to four-time champion Beholder, Grade 1 winner Mendelssohn, and Grade 1 winner and leading sire Into Mischief, sold by Clarkland of Fred Mitchell to Mandy Pope's Whisper Hill Farm for that record $8.2 million. Record for a filly. You think she's got some pedigree? Half-sister to four-time champion Beholder, Grade 1 winner Mendelssohn, and Grade 1 winner and leading sire Into Mischief. Think about that. Spectacular. The sale continues, as I mentioned, 9 more sessions set to go. On the racing side of things this weekend, 10 Breeders' Cup Challenge races are set to be contested. You have a couple at Churchill Downs this afternoon, the Iroquois and the Pocahontas. Both of those win in your ends. Also the start of the Kentucky Derby points races, looking ahead to the first Saturday in May. Never too early to start talking Kentucky Derby. You have a couple of races at Woodbine. One today, the Rico Woodbine Mile. You have a couple tomorrow with the Natalma and the Summer Stakes for the two-year-olds. And then you have action at Leopardstown and at the Curragh in Ireland. All of those win in your ends. 10 Breeders' Cup Challenge races contested over the course of the next 2 days. It's going to be a really busy weekend. I'm going to talk with trainer Dale Romans coming up later in the program. He saddles Dennis's Moment in the Grade 3 Iroquois, a winner of, 19 lengths in his maiden effort last time out at Ellis Park. I'll talk to Dale about Dennis's Moment. I'll talk to Ed DeRosa from Brisnet and Twin Spires, and I'll talk to Jeff Bratt, who is the handicapper at Woodbine, to preview all of the weekend's races. The lead story of the entire week, though, overshadowing all of that, the bombshell story, if you want to look at it in that fashion, came on Wednesday afternoon when Joe Drape of the New York Times published his article alleging that 2018 Triple Crown winner Justify failed a post-race drug test following his win in the Santa Anita Derby, which, of course, gave him the necessary points to get into the Kentucky Derby in the first place. According to the story, Justify tested positive for, and I'm going to say it, and I hope I say it correctly, scopolamine, might be scopolamine. He tested positive after that race, the Santa Anita Derby. And the way the story is portrayed, it leads you to believe that there was an intentional cover-up, if you will, by the California Horse Racing Board. Of course, the Justify connections have come out this past week. This article published on Wednesday in the New York Times. The connections coming out on Thursday afternoon with statements disputing those claims. Bob Baffert saying that, quote, "I've never administered that drug or had it administered to one of my horses. I wouldn't even know how it would come, what form it would come in." Elliot Walden, who is the president and CEO and racing manager of Windstar Farm, which co-owned Justify with China Horse Club, Head of Plains Partners, and Starlight Racing, he said the same thing. Very disappointed. He said they knew about the failed post-race drug test in mid-April, and they turned the matter over to their attorneys, never heard anything further on the matter. Now, keep in mind, the way that this is going to be perceived by the general public and has been is that racing is doping and drugging their horses. That's going to be the latest black eye for horse racing. This, again, scopolamine, is a known contaminant in California. It can be found in bedding straw, according to Rick Bedeker, who is the executive director of the CHRB. It can easily end up being mixed with feed. Matt Haggerty is going to join me. He's from the Daily Racing Forum. He'll join me here in a few minutes. He's been on top of this story from the start. Matt has an article out there on DRF you can go read. The chairman of the CHRB, at least the acting chairman when all of this took place last year, Chuck Winter, he is no longer in that position. He retired. Said in a statement released on Thursday afternoon that the CHRB followed protocol in this situation to a T. Followed it to a T. And that there were other horses that also came back with positive tests for this substance. And the same procedure was followed. All of the cases dismissed. I'll get a chance to talk to Matt here coming up right around 8:15 Eastern time, just about 6 minutes from right now. And we'll get the latest. Again, this is a fluid story. It is still developing. It is what looks to be more of a contaminant issue than a drug issue. But that's not the way the initial story was portrayed, and that's what has a lot of people up in arms. So I'm going to get a chance to talk to Matt. We'll get the latest from him. Keep in mind, Justify swept through the Triple Crown passed every drug test after the Derby, the Preakness, and the Belmont. Justified did not win the Triple Crown as a drugged horse. Of course, the question will be, should he have been in the Kentucky Derby in the first place? And if you, again, if you listen and read what Chuck Winner had to say, then the answer is yes. They followed protocol. So we'll see. We'll talk to Matt Haggerty coming up here in just a few minutes, get the latest and all the information on that developing situation. Again, Dale Roman's going to be with me later in the first half of the program. Ed DeRosa from Briss and Twin Spires. Jeff Bratt, the handicapper at Woodbine, toward the end of the program. And Sean Byrne, who is the director of the Equine Industry Program at the University of Louisville, will join me right around 9 o'clock Eastern. They have a really interesting lecture series coming up over the next several weeks, looking at various topics within the industry. They'll have several speakers come in. They do a great job with that U of L program, and I'll get a chance to talk to Sean coming up at 9 o'clock Eastern time. Poll question of the day. You can go to at HRRN on Twitter to let us know your thoughts. Okay, let's do it this way. Rather than a straight poll question, who is your best bet of the day? I mentioned those 10 winning your in races. There is great racing, not just in those stakes races, but the cards at all the racetracks across the country today. Just remarkable. Who is your best bet of the day on this Saturday afternoon? Let me know, and I'll try to pass that along. Maybe I shouldn't pass it along. Maybe you want that price to stay up. At HRN on Twitter, Horse Racing Radio Network on Facebook. Who is your best bet on this Saturday afternoon of racing? Matt Haggerty from the Daily Racing Forum is up next. Stay with me. It's the Equine Forum on HRRN, presented by Red Brand Fence, manufacturing the V-mesh and non-climb fence you see on horse farms worldwide.
Hello, I'm Eric Hamelback, CEO of the National HBPA. Thoroughbred owners and trainers know the importance of keeping their horse on schedule, on the track, and injury-free. Even a small injury can result in losing precious time and serious money. That's why farms worldwide trust Keep Safe V-Mesh Fence from Red Brand. The strong mesh design flexes on impact and reduces injuries, keeping your athletes on schedule and on the track. Learn more about Keep Safe V-Mesh Horse Fence at redbrand.com.
When it's time to paint the fences and barns, think Farm Paint. At Farm Paint, you get the industry's best coatings and paints factory direct at low, low prices. Farm Paint is your source for quality paints, roof coatings, dustless arena footings, and more. You can purchase online or drop into a Farm Paint store near you with locations in Heart of Bluegrass Country at 700 Phillips Lane in Lexington, Kentucky, Columbus, Ohio, and Sandusky, Ohio. Buy factory direct and save at farmpaint.com. That's farmpaint.com.
Woodbine is celebrating their fall turf season from September 6th to October 14th with 23 stakes races and more than $5.4 million in purses. September 14th and 15th is Rico Woodbine Mile weekend with three Breeders' Cup winning your in races, the $1 million Rico Woodbine Mile, the Grade 1 Natama Stakes, and Grade 1 Summer Stakes. On October 12th, two more Grade 1 turf races highlight the program, the Grade 1 Pattison Canadian International and Grade 1 E.P. Taylor Stakes. For more information, please visit woodbine.com.
Picari Bloodstock is consistently among the top consigners at major sales. In addition to selling a million-dollar-plus yearling, Picari's standouts on the racetrack include Reynaldo the Wizard.
Coming after Reynaldo the Wizard, he's still in front, the Wizard, and he's won. Reynaldo the Wizard has beaten Belmont Mass.
And recent Grade 1 winner, Salty.
Here comes Salty down inside to grab the lead, and Salty has won it.
Visit the Picari Bloodstock consignment at major sales to find your next superstar.
Learn the business of horses in the world's only accredited equine business program, the University of Louisville Equine Business Program. The University of Louisville has a legacy of excellence for more than 25 years of equine business education. Classes are taught by industry experts in state-of-the-art facilities located in the heartland of America's equine industry. The University of Louisville Equine Business Program. When it comes to horses, we mean business. For more information, visit business.louisville.edu/equine. Equine.
Brody's Cause, a Grade 1 winner at 2 and 3 by Giants Causeway.
Brody's Cause and Corey Lannery, a tremendous run from deep in the pack to pull the upset in the Claiborne Breeders' Futurity.
His final time of 143.27 in Keeneland's Grade 1 Breeders' Futurity is the fastest running on dirt since 2000, while defeating Grade 1 winner, Exaggerator. Look for his first crop yearling selling this summer. Brody's Cause, standing at Spendthrift.
This is Elliot Walden, and you're listening to the Horse Racing Radio Network.
You're listening to the Equine Forum on the Horse Racing Radio Network, presented by Red Brand Fence.
And they're into the stretch, and Justify comes roaring home to a raucous Belmont Park with one furlong to run. Gronkowski and Hofberg trying to run him down. Vino Rosso is fourth, a 16th to go. Justify is still there. Justify from Gronkowski. He's just perfect, and now he's just immortal. Justify is the 13th Triple Crown winner. Gronkowski was second. Hofberg was third, and Vino Rosso was fourth. Justify has done it.
Larry Colmus with the call of that 2018 Belmont Stakes. Justify becoming the 13th Triple Crown winner in the history of thoroughbred racing and doing it in undefeated style. Yeah, he was pretty darn good. Also ended that curse of Apollo, the only horse to win the Kentucky Derby, the only other horse to win the Kentucky Derby without having started as a two-year-old. Justify did that and then swept through the Triple Crown. And as you heard at the top of the show, he has been the topic of much discussion in the sport of thoroughbred racing over the past couple of days. And joining us now to help shine some light on what's happening with this situation is Matt Haggerty with the Daily Racing Forum. He's been on top of it from the start. Matt, first of all, good morning, my friend.
Good morning, Mike. Thanks for having me on.
Yeah, you know, I said this at the top of the show. It's too bad that it was kind of a slow news week, huh?
Yeah, you did have the sales going on and a lot of discussion about the Jockey Club proposal on capping stallions. And then you did have this story breaking on the New York Times on Wednesday night. So, yeah, it's been a pretty busy week in central Kentucky for sure.
I kind of laid out some of the details in the opening segment, and I referenced the fact that you have an article out there on Daily Racing Forum right now referencing some comments from the chairman of the CHRB at the time. That was Chuck Winter. He's not in that position anymore. Saying that the CHRB did indeed follow protocol on this basically to a T. So catch us up on everything now. Where does this situation stand?
Yeah, I think there's still a lot of questions out there as far as the authority that the CHRB had to act in this manner, you know, whether or not there were the proper rules in place in which you could consider mitigating circumstances in a case like this. I know Mick Ruiz was quoted in at least one article over the last couple of days saying that he was considering a lawsuit based on the Santa Anita Derby result. And I think that's going to make getting answers to those questions a little difficult because once that's in play, then the lawyers get involved at the commission level. They'll be very careful about what they say. And so I think right now you do have the CHRB saying that, yes, this was a case of environmental contamination. We did the proper investigation under our rules. We don't name a trainer unless we file a complaint. Since there wasn't a complaint filed in this case, then it was case closed and we didn't, and we followed our protocols. Like I said, I think, you know, that there still needs to be a little digging on the timeline here, and what rule was exactly in place at the time that they considered the case. But then you also have some kind of weird circumstances in the racing industry over the past 10 years as they've tried to better deal with environmental contamination. That probably introduces some wrinkles into this as well.
And as you pointed out in the article, this Bob Baffert's horse, Justify, was not the only horse that tested positive for this particular substance in their system, and all of the cases were handled in the same fashion. Is that right?
Well, that's what the CHRB says.
Yep.
Now, with scopolamine and with a lot of prohibited substances, just to make sure that racing labs aren't filing test results with the commission on every single horse, you know, based on a one or two nanogram finding in a test result, say of cocaine, which is omnipresent in the environment, can be detected at very low levels. There's what's called a regulatory limit. Now, what we know is that there was a report issued on Justify because it was above the regulatory limit, and we don't know how many of those other horses tested above the regulatory limit as well. Now, there could be a case in which the CHRB, upon finding one or two over that same weekend, requested all the test results for all those horses and then found samples that had tested for scopolamine below the regulatory limit. I know this sounds really technical, but we don't really know the total disposition of those cases because we haven't gotten chapter and verse on what happened there. We do know that the CHRB is claiming that, yeah, we had a spate of scopolamines that weekend, and that all of them were dismissed because we had traced them back to contaminated feed that had made its way to four barns there at Santa Anita.
Yeah, man, I'm still in the process of learning about this particular substance, scopolamine, to the point where at the top of the show, I went with a couple of different pronunciations to make sure I was getting it right. So scopolamine is the right pronunciation of it, but it doesn't sound, from everything I've been reading, it doesn't sound like this is something that trainers are going to give their horses to try to improve performance. It just doesn't seem like it works that way with this particular substance.
Yeah, with the exception of the one quote, which was somewhat puzzling in the initial article, I haven't had a conversation with a chemist or a horseman yet who thinks that this substance, it's a naturally occurring substance in Jimson weed. The chemical name is hyoscine. That you would administer this to a horse for a performance-enhancing effect. One, you're going to get caught. It's routine on the drug assays that are done on the post-race tests. Two, it's toxic. Three, it doesn't have predictable effects on a horse. And so, if you were to try to use this for some reason, you're going to get caught anyway. It's not something that you would get a predictable performance-enhancing effect on. Now, it is on the list of prohibited substances, but so are 500 other substances that are known to have a pharmacological effect on a horse, which is why it's prohibited. It would have a pharmacological effect. So, it's just hard to understand why a trainer prior to the Santa Anita Derby would administer deliberately a substance like this to a horse, when the easiest explanation and the explanation that we've seen over the past 25 years since scopolamine first cropped up in California was that the feed was contaminated, and their investigations, at least according to them, said that was their conclusion.
Yeah, you know, by the way, talking with Matt Haggerty of the Daily Racing Forum here on the Horse Racing Radio Network, you know, Matt, Ray Pollock of the Pollock Report put out a couple of tweets after this article came out, and I want to read this because I thought it was spot on. He talked about scopolamine, the same prohibited substance found in 1995, and he said that could have been 1994. It was right in that time in the mid-90s, in horses trained in California by Ron McAnally, Willard Proctor, Mark Hennig, and Richard Mandela. The CHRB looked foolish prosecuting those cases even after it became clear the source was Jimson weed contamination. In fact, the CHRB could not rule out that the contaminations may have occurred in the CHRB-controlled test barn, so those trainers were exonerated after the case was heard by an administrative judge. But the disqualification of the horses who tested positive was not overturned. So this is something that the state of California has been dealing with since the mid-90s, and probably even further back than that.
Yeah, I included the information about the 1994 positive. The positives were 1994,
yep,
eventually adjudicated in 1995. In my articles, starting out the coverage, because of its obvious relevance to this case.
Yeah.
Now, you know, you've had other scopolamines pop up. The last time that the CHRB actually adjudicated one, as in took it to a complaint, was 2007. It was a Jerry Hollendorfer horse. they eventually got around to issuing a fine in August of 2018. It took them 18 months to adjudicate the case. Since that time, there's been a lot of evolution in how racing commissions across the United States deal with possible environmental contaminants. Rules have been changed to kind of weaken the absolute insurer rule to make sure that horsemen aren't getting unfairly penalized for something like this. And, you know, to be honest, racing commissions are a little, even a lot more gun-shy these days about adjudicating a case like this, knowing that they're going to end up in civil court and knowing that the most likely result after spending all that time and money fighting it is that a judge is going to throw it out.
Yep.
So you have all those factors going into this as they're considering this positive by or this test result by Justify. And, you know, it's you can argue either way on what the CHRB will do, but there's precedent for this, and there's precedent, you know, across the United States on it.
Matt, does this bring to light maybe even a bigger issue in the sport? The fact that we do allow our regulators, people that are on these racing boards in all these different states, for example, to be in positions with major conflicts of interest, in many cases owning a horse or horses who are in the care of a trainer that they may have to eventually discipline. Is that a problem that needs to be addressed?
Yeah, I definitely think it's a problem that needs to be addressed. In this case, you had Chuck Winter, who actually owned a piece of a horse that was trained by Baffert. Now, I know that Chuck has said that, well, it was a tiny piece of a horse that hadn't even started, something like that. But you do see this at racing commissions across the United States. And let's be fair. It is not just the racing industry in which people with financial interests in the industry that they're regulating sits on boards. You find, you know, lawyers are on the bar. You have doctors on medical boards, veterinarians on veterinary boards. There is a certain amount of expertise that you want on these boards so that you can craft the proper regulations. At the same time, there should be a recusal process in this. Now, as I understand it, Winter has said that he did seek guidance from their legal counsel on whether he should have recused himself. So, you know, perhaps he did have the green light based on that guidance. But here in Kentucky, I brought this up on a radio show a couple of days ago. We had the Graham Motion case here, which I'm sure you guys probably talked about, which was another case of environmental contamination.
Yep.
And when they eventually deliberated on the settlement in a closed-door session, you know, I asked for the vote count and got something like, oh, it was 8-0. Well, there's 15 people on the commission. 7 people had to recuse themselves from the decision because they had some sort of financial interest with Graham Motion. You know, you probably could find some people that aren't that deep into the industry that have, you know, a working knowledge of it to avoid these things. And I think if something is going to come out of this, and I know the columnist for the San Diego Union-Tribune did something on this the other day, it would be looking at this idea of conflict of interest and trying to clean those conflicts up.
Yeah, it's kind of a catch-22, isn't it, Matt? Because we talk about that a lot, that you want people that have some skin in the game, that have that passion and want the sport to go forward. You want people that are invested in the sport in some way. We see it all the time where industry organizations bring in people from, say, golf or tennis, and they know nothing about horse racing, and they put them in positions to make decisions, and it never, never works out. Just doesn't. So you want people to have skin in the game.
That's a good point, because the racing industry does not have a really good history of bringing in people from other disciplines and them being successful, you know, either over the short term or the long term. You know, there is a certain amount of expertise that you do want on these boards. And like you said, you want passion for the game. People that believe in the game and the business, but know how to recognize what is a violation or a conflict of interest. And so I think there's a fine line you walk there, and that's probably where a lot of the controversy is based here. And that this looks, you know, the appearance of the conflict of interest is a conflict of interest. That's just how ethics lawyers deal with these things. So, you know, at the very least, you would hope that people will be taking a a better look at what the conflicts could be when they're making decisions in adjudications.
Well, Matt, I know this story is going to continue to evolve, and I know you'll be on top of it as you have been from the beginning. We'll encourage people to follow you on Twitter to get all of your Daily Racing Form stories. That's at DRF Haggerty, H-E-G-A-R-T-Y, at DRF Haggerty on Twitter, and that'll link you to all of the Daily Racing Form articles. And keep up to date on what's happening. There'll be more to come, I'm sure. And Matt, really appreciate the visit here this morning. Like all of our guests who appear on the program, you're going to receive a gift courtesy of Embrace the Race, the apparel for the horse racing lifestyle, and people can wear what they love by going to embracetherace.com. Appreciate the visit, my friend.
Thanks for having me on, Mike.
All right, thanks, Matt. Matt Haggerty here on HRRN. Dale Roman's coming up next. He's going to talk about the exciting two-year-old Dennis's Moment going to the post later this afternoon in the Iroquois at Churchill Downs. But first, time for your Lexus Legends of the Turf, brought to you every Saturday at this time by the Lexus Store of Lexington.
This is the story of one of the once-living legends of the American turf who, unhappily to relate, outlived his legendary status into an ever-lengthening twilight of economic hardship and poor health, and who, at the age of 69 in a Jacksonville, Oregon nursing home, met the Grim Reaper after a prolonged illness on August 16, 1968. For many years, he had been a hanger-on at New York racetracks, waiting for that one more chance which never came, and dreaming of the glory of the 1920s when he was, quite literally, the toast of Broadway. In that golden age of sport, he was to thoroughbred racing what Babe Ruth was to baseball, Bobby Jones to golf, Bill Tilden to tennis, Red Grange to football, Jack Dempsey to boxing, and Johnny Weissmuller to swimming. Each was the symbol and the very epitome of their particular sport, their names household words. He first saw the light of day, did our man of the day, so to speak, in Groton, South Dakota, in November 13, 1898, of Norwegian ancestry, and he grew up on a ranch in American Falls, Idaho, where he took to riding horses as naturally as the proverbial duck takes to water. He rode his first official race on January 25, 1918, and won, the first of 968 wins in over 3,600 mounts, who earned nearly $3 million, an enormous amount in that day and age. His lifetime winning percentage was 26%, remarkable. In 1919, his contract was purchased by Commander J.K.L. Ross, for whose Canadian-based stable he rode such stars as Milkmaid, Billy Kelly, and Sir Barton. He later rode for Harry Sinclair's Rancoca stable, and it was in the silks of this stable that his star shot across the heavens of thoroughbred racing with meteoric rapidity. He led the jockey list with Money One in 1921, the year he won the Belmont aboard Grey Lag. And in 1923, the year he won the Derby and Belmont with a leg up on John E. Madden's Zev. His 1923 records of 39 stakes wins and nearly $570,000 in purses were to stand as riding records for more than 20 years. He had a nasty spill at Saratoga in 1924 and a gallstone operation as well, sidelining him for some 8 months. He had trouble getting mounts on his return to the saddle, but to get the mount on Flying Ebony in the Derby, he did, and he won in the slop on that one at Churchill. That same year, he won the Belmont while aboard Mad Play. In 1927, he won the Belmont on Chance Shot for owner Joseph Widener, president of Belmont Park. It was largely under Widener's aegis that he was restored to good standing in March of 1928, after he had been suspended and banned from all tracks in the fall of 1927 for his ride on Bateau in the Pimlico Futurity. In spite of that suspension, he was a leading money-winning rider of 1927. After reinstatement, he had the stomach and weight problems, and he subsequently hung up his tack, as it were, to race and train horses. He encountered financial difficulty in that venture and ultimately bowed to creditors by dispersing his stable in 1929. He came out of retirement to ride for William Woodward Sr. in 1930. That year, he was aboard Gallant Fox, who chalked up a triple crown. That year's win in the Belmont was his fifth in that event, while the rider and horse retired in 1931. Our man came out of retirement for a second time to ride in 1932, chalking up 13 wins. And then, final retirement and the beginning of a long road to abject obscurity. He refused all offers to ride in Europe, and had a brief fling as a chanteur at the Stork Club in New York, plus a stint in radio and as a movie producer, none of those with success. In 1938, when back in the game as a trainer, he saddled stagehand for wins in both the Santa Anita Derby and the Santa Anita Handicap. He was that season's leading money-winning trainer. In 1944, he turned to breeding, but that proved to be a disastrous venture. He once said, quote, "Money and me are incompatible." In 1953, at the age of 55, he got himself down to riding weight and had 10 mounts and won one of those. That victory, to phenomenal acclaim, I might add, was at the old Jamaica Racetrack on Long Island, October 14, 1953. The effort to make weight had taken its toll, and from then on until he left New York for Oregon, he lived in a donated room over a Long Island restaurant, eating with friends who relived his past glories. The story of this paragon of saddlesmiths, replete with its ecstasies and agonies, its apogees and perigees, its zeniths and its nadirs of human accomplishment and endeavor, as though reaching out for that one final straw of recognition, is indeed a most sad commentary. It does not detract one single scintilla from the composite accomplishment of this man, accomplishments which stamped him indelibly in giant letters on the pages of racing lore. Our subject of this dissertation was immortalized through the pen of Damon Runyon in the 1920s. Runyon, often watching him ride Pendant Oud in testimony to this man titled, "A Guy Named Sandy." He was Earl Sandy.
Visionary design, visceral performance, and imaginary technology. That's Lexus. When every detail, every moment, and every emotion is crafted by Lexus, it leads to amazing. Experience artistry that inspires, design that compels, and engineering that excites. This is Mike Pena, and I can tell you personally, as a Lexus owner, the enjoyment you'll experience from driving any of the Lexus model lines is unparalleled. Visit the Lexus store of Lexington today and see what I've been talking about for nearly 15 years. The people truly make the difference. Lexus has also been a longtime supporter of the horse industry, with a Keeneland shop located at the Lexus store of Lexington and through their sponsorship of Keeneland's Lexus Raven Run Stakes each fall. And remember, when you go to the Lexus store, ask for the Godfather, Tony Attiano. Talk horses and experience amazing in your brand new Lexus.
Bloom Racing. Started by former jockey and 35-year racing industry veteran Jeffrey Bloom, Bloom Racing offers racing partnerships, bloodstock services, pinhooking, and private race management.
Pulling away from Come Dancing, Mopetism, and the others, Midnight Bizou leaves no doubt today. She won the Phipps in hand.
Experience the fun, excitement, and exclusive access of racehorse ownership with Bloom Racing. Forming racing partnerships now, get in on the action at bloomracing.com.
Join us at Hollywood Casino at Charlestown Races on Saturday, September 21st for the 11th annual Race for the Ribbon. Another stellar card in store, eight stakes races worth over $700,000 and headlined by the Grade 3 $300,000 Charlestown Oaks. And proceeds from the evening will go towards the fight against breast cancer here in West Virginia. The action kicks off with a special first post time of 5 p.m. Eastern. It's the Race for the Ribbon and the Grade 3 Charlestown Oaks here at Hollywood Casino at Charlestown Races.
I'm visiting with Joe Brown Nicholson of Nicholson Insurance Agency. Joe, how are things in the insurance world?
Things are just fine in the insurance business, Mike. I'm grateful for the people who place their trust in Nicholson Insurance Agency to protect their homes, autos, farms, and horses against financial loss. As you know, we represent many insurance companies, so we can choose just the right company for each client at the right price. We welcome each opportunity to provide quality service to our clients.
So having many companies seems important.
Absolutely. Just like in thoroughbred racing and breeding, competition also works for the betterment of the insurance industry. I am constantly impressed with the ways companies respond to consumer demands with new insurance products and services.
Thanks, Joe. For your equine and general insurance needs, call Nicholson Insurance Agency at 859-224-7080 or visit us on Facebook. You gotta know Joe.
Hello, this is Steve Cawthon, thoroughbred jockey, winner of the Triple Crown 1978 aboard Affirmed, and you are listening to the Horse Racing Radio Network.
You're listening to the Equine Forum on the Horse Racing Radio Network, presented by Red Brand Fence.
Dennis's moment opening up on a six-length lead as they leave the quarter-mile pole behind, and it's the Albaugh family stable charge. Dennis's moment comes roaring off the turn in complete control by the eighth pole. Has opened up a 9-10-length lead. Cairo King up into second. Then comes the Jungle Runner. They're inside the final 16th of a mile. You can put a ring around Dennis's moment. Dennis's moment, a name to remember here. Dennis's moment shines. He won by at least 17 lengths. Cairo King was next, then came So Union, and Dennis's moment stopped the timer in an impressive 121-4, just off the track record.
Welcome back to the Equine Forum, presented by Red Brand Fence. Mike Penna, Baron of the Backstretch, coming to you from our Jimmy John's of Lexington broadcast studios. Gorgeous morning here in the heart of the bluegrass, and the Keeneland September sale continuing. 9 more days set to go for that one. And a horse that did not come from the Keeneland sale came from the Fasig Tipton Saratoga sale, a sale we broadcast every year here on the network, is Dennis's moment. And you just heard the call of him breaking his maiden, the official margin 19 lengths, and the final time 121-4. That was for 7 furlongs at Ellis Park on July 27th. This is a special horse, and we'll see him in action later today for trainer Dale Romans. He's in search of a third victory in the Iroquois, and Dennis's moment looks like he's poised to do that for him. Dale is with us now here on the Equine Forum. Dale, good morning, my friend.
Hey, good morning.
This horse, we just played the clip of this horse breaking his maiden, Dennis's moment, and have you, I know you've been around some pretty darn good horses, my friend, but this is, that performance was so impressive.
Yeah, it's about the best maiden victory I've ever seen, so I don't know, I've been around a lot of good ones, and he acts like he's one of the best.
When did you start to get a sense that he could be this kind of horse?
Well, they liked him a lot when they were breaking him, and then when he came in to us, I mean, the first couple of times he breezed, I knew we were working with some good horses, and nobody could keep up with him, so I figured we were on something pretty special.
And then he comes out in his maiden race and clips heels, loses jockey Robbie Alvarado, that was in June, and then redeems himself with that 19-length victory. What was going through your mind when you saw him clip heels and you saw Robbie come off?
Oh, that was a bad day. I was just hoping, I saw the reins were still in place, and I hoped they wouldn't come over his head, trip him, or he wouldn't get hurt. And then worried about he was hurt when we got back to the barn, but he sure got lucky that day. And that showed how good he really is. For him to stumble like he did, get himself up, recover, and come back. And he ran down the horse that won the race in 58 and change.
Yep. You know, you were saying that was maybe the most special maiden breaking performance that you've seen, and you've seen a lot of them. 19 lengths, the final margin. As he's drawing off through the stretch, and you're watching that, what's going through your mind?
Well, I mean, I just couldn't believe what I was seeing. He just kept getting widening and widening. The jockey said he actually never asked him to run. He said he couldn't tell he was going that fast, but he knew he was going to win. He said, "Turn around, look, there was nobody back there." I mean, it had me shaking. It was so impressive.
Well, now he has to stretch out, go 2 turns in this mile and a 16th Iroquois later this afternoon. What have you done to make sure he's ready to stretch out?
Well, he hadn't missed a beat. I mean, the thing is, you don't want to overdo it. But he hadn't missed a work. He's been on a racetrack every day since he ran it. And he naturally should relish the distance with his pedigree.
Yeah, he should. Son of Tisnow, and a horse that appears to be as talented as they come. And just in case you're wondering, Dale, just 231 days, 10 hours, 6 minutes, and 34 seconds until the first Saturday in May.
Yeah, that's a lot of strides for a horse.
Do you let that cross your mind at all at this point?
That's way too early. I mean, you can't help but to start dreaming a little bit, but there's so much in between here and there. We just want to get through this race, and if he runs like we're expecting to, point towards the Breeders' Cup.
You've done pretty well in this Iroquois, too. This, again, looking for your third victory. You won it in 2013 with Claiborne, came back in 2016 with Not This Time. What is it about this race that just seems to fit your overall schedule and your philosophy?
Well, it's Churchill Downs, for one. That's home. And, the last 10 years we've been dealing with a lot of young horses and trying to make a Derby horse or a Triple Crown horse. And this is the first step in the path of the Derby. So it's just a pretty pretty obvious fit for us.
You know, he showed a lot of speed going to the front right off the bat in that 7-furlong maiden win. Is that the strategy you expect to see again today?
There's a lot of speed in the race, so we'll just leave it up to the jock. Iran Ortiz, the best rider in the country, he's coming in to ride him. I'll just tell him to break and put him wherever he feels comfortable and just try not to get him stopped.
Talk about that relationship you have with the Albaugh's. Obviously, you've had a ton of success in recent years partnering with them. Talk about that relationship.
Yeah, it's been good. I mean, we put a system together several years ago to try to get Derby horses, and we've out of 5 years, we've gotten there three times. And really, everybody thinks they have a lot of horses. We only buy about 8 yearlings a year. So the system's working, and hopefully this horse can get us there too, and they definitely deserve to win a big one.
Yeah, no doubt about it. This horse sold for $400,000 as a yearling at the Saratoga sale, the Fasig-Tipton Saratoga sale last year. What was it you saw in him as a yearling that made you think, okay, we got to have him?
Well, we got a big team that goes out and selects the horses. They've got from the pedigree analyst to the shortlisters to Barry Berkelheim, and I come through with the final say. And he just jumped through all our hoops. You know, they have to go through a cardiovascular exam and a skeleton exam. And he jumped through all the hoops, and you know, the price point we thought was fair for Saratoga, especially $400,000. Looks like it's going to pay off.
Yeah, it certainly does. He's talented. Dennis's moment in the Grade 3 Iroquois Race 10 at Churchill this afternoon. You have a few others, too. You have three other maidens that are entered. You have two in the fourth race and one in the 11th, the race following the Iroquois. Tell me a little bit about Cigar Box and Fight, Fight, Fight in the fourth.
Well, we scratched Fight, Fight, Fight. I didn't like him come out one horn. I'm going to wait and run him in a long race. And Cigar Box is a nice horse. He's doing good. You never know about on debut, but he's training very well. We've got a very talented horse in Continental Clash. Another Tisnow. He's a big, strong colt, and we got a start at him over Ellis. And he just wanted to—I know he wanted to stretch out all along. I just wanted to get a race at Ellis before we came here.
You know, it's funny when you think about sports teams, Dale. You often hear that they don't rebuild; they reload. And every year you come around with these top two-year-olds, it seems like that's all you do. You don't rebuild; you just reload.
Well, in this game, everything starts over in September when we start buying babies again. And hopefully we continue to do that. You know, our goal is to win a Kentucky Derby one day. And the only way you can do it is start with some good young horses.
Yeah, it would be special. Dale Roman's a native of Louisville. To win the Kentucky Derby at his home track in his hometown would be quite remarkable. Dale, as always, man, I appreciate the visit, and thanks for spending a few minutes. I know you got a lot of things to get to today, so I'll let you go. Like all of our guests, we're going to send you a gift courtesy of Embrace the Race, the apparel for the horse racing lifestyle. We'll get that to you, and I'll look forward to seeing you again soon.
Thanks, buddy. We've always got time for you.
All right, good luck today.
Thanks.
Dale Roman's here on HRRN. Wanted to ask him his thoughts on the situation with Justify, but running out of time here in this first half of the program, so didn't get time to do it. But some great insight into Dennis's moment, and knowing that he was special for a very, very long time, doing everything the way you expect a good horse to do it. Can't wait to see him run. And that's a tough race. There are a lot of ways that you can go in that race. And by the way, our poll question today, if you want to weigh in, at HRRN on Twitter, Horse Racing Radio Network on Facebook, with all the great racing across the country today, I just want to know, who is your best bet of the day? Who is it? Is it one of the maidens at Churchill Downs? Is it a horse in the Iroquois, the Pocahontas? Is it a horse at Woodbine? Maybe it's a horse at Laurel. Maybe it's a horse at Gulfstream. Let me know. Who is your best bet today with all the great racing taking place? At HRN on Twitter, Horse Racing Radio Network on Facebook. Going to get to a break. We'll come back with the Industry Star of the Week segment presented by Stuart Morris, and then get you set for hour number two. This is the Equine Forum on the Horse Racing Radio Network, your home for the Breeders' Cup.
Tappet. His impact on the breed will last for generations. With more graded stakes winners, more Grade 1 winners, and more million-dollar yearlings than any other active American stallion. For owners and breeders, his progeny have created memories that will last a lifetime. Find your Tappet at the upcoming yearling sales. America's most dominant sire. Tappet, standing at Gainesway.
Hi, Tony.
Hey, Matthew.
There's a reason why Tony's Steaks and Seafood is my favorite restaurant. It's because I want to feel part of the family. Isn't that right, Tony?
That's right. There's a saying on the wall that I truly believe in. There's always room for one more at our table. We just want you to be part of our family.
And believe me, you will be. It's Tony's Steaks and Seafood right across from Triangle Park. Visit them at tonysteaksandseafood.com.
The Maryland thoroughbred industry. For over 200 years, the innovative leader. Maryland was the first to have organized racing in North America and the first to establish a state breeders association. Maryland created the first thoroughbred yearling show, the first state magazine, the first state breeder incentive development program, the first international race to feature horses from four continents, and the first $1 million one-day stallion stakes event. The Maryland thoroughbred industry is the innovative leader.
It's time now to shine the spotlight on the Darley Taking the Reins Performer of the Week.
Totally Boss wins, coming away almost two lengths. Social Paranoia hits the lead, and Social Paranoia wins.
Totally Boss proved to be just that in winning the Grade 3 Turf Sprint at Kentucky Downs this past weekend with a 101 buyer speed figure punching his ticket to the Breeders' Cup Turf Sprint. The son of Darley Stallion Street Boss was joined by fellow Street Boss progeny Social Paranoia, who scored in the $600,000 Dueling Grounds Derby, also at Kentucky Downs. Those winning efforts make Totally Boss and Social Paranoia your Darley Taking the Reins Performers of the Week. Darley Stallion Street Boss, the fastest son of the Great Street Cry, has proven to be a boss for all seasons, totaling three stakes winners this past weekend alone. Totally Boss, Social Paranoia, and Lady Alita. Learn more about Street Boss and all the Darley Stallions by visiting DarleyAmerica.com.
Hi, I'm Leah Jarmati, and I love listening to the Horse Racing Radio Network.
You're listening to the Equine Forum on the Horse Racing Radio Network, presented by Red Brand Fence.
That's 2,900,000. Thank you.
Well, that's the way it sounded Tuesday afternoon at Keeneland here in Lexington. $2.9 million for the son of Warfront, who is the third foal out of Millionaire Believe You Can, a daughter of Proud Citizen who was bred and raced by former Kentucky Governor Brereton Jones, and his son Brett was there for the entire process, and this is the most expensive horse that they have ever brought to auction and ever sold, and Brett is with us now. He is our Industry Star of the Week, presented by Stuart Morris, this segment honoring those individuals who continue to get up every day, continue to work hard at this game, and do things the right way. And Brett Jones, his father Brereton, certainly fit the bill when it comes to that. And Brett with me now here on HRRN. Brett, good morning. Congratulations.
Good morning, Mike. How are you, buddy?
I'm very well. How about you?
We're out here at Barn 48, just sitting outside here and watching prospective buyers come in, and hopefully we can have a good day today. But thank you so much for having us, and star of the week, and my name is the biggest misnomer probably in the in the history of your show, because my job was to stand outside and thank people for looking at a nice horse and then watching this horse bring the money that he did. I mean, the stars are the people that all the guys in the barns that have raised this horse from the time that he first laid down next to Believe You Can. So I appreciate you having us on, but you got that one all wrong, I'm afraid.
Well, maybe we need to make that son of Warfront the star of the week. Maybe
there
that's more appropriate.
That'll work.
Yeah, so okay. So take me back to that moment. You're watching the bidding. You're seeing the numbers go up. You're looking at a record horse for Airdrie Stud at this point, $2.9 million. Take me through the process. What was it like watching this happen?
It was amazing, and I said in an interview immediately afterwards, but the real emotion, honestly, to me, and being in the ring is ridiculous. I mean, it's just a crazy feeling. You we've never had anything like that. It's such a far cry from anything that we've ever had enter a sales ring. I think our highest before that was 1.2, 1.3, which, as we all know, is a ton of money. But 2.9 was a different stratosphere for us. So that was amazing. But really, before when we were in the back ring and we had all the people coming up to us and we kind of knew exactly, we knew we were about to hit a big home run. And I was out there with Dad. Dad actually had my son Thomas, our 3-year-old, in his arms at that point. And as I said in another interview, Tim Thornton and Richard Royster, two guys that had been with us forever, who were no longer with the farm, but they were right there with us in the back ring and wishing us luck. And you just knew it was going to be special. And that was really the moment that it kind of hit me what a special time we're about to have, and what a big deal it was going to be for Dad, and how this really was kind of the culmination of his 50 years in the industry. So it was a really special moment. And then when the hammer drops at 2.9 million, it's disbelief. It's the best kind of disbelief that there is. It was great.
Yeah, well, that's the reason, Brett, that I really did want to honor you. And it's not just about you. It's about your dad and the entire team at Airdrie as our industry star of the week, because of what you just touched on there. I can remember standing with Buff Bradley and his family when they watched Groupie Doll go through the ring and said goodbye to her. And she had been so great to them. And they watched her sell at Keeneland. And there were tears. There was all kinds of emotion. And as I watched your interview on TVG after this horse sold, I could tell it was the same situation for you and for your family. I mean, the amount of work and effort that goes into getting a horse into the auction ring is immense. Right. And it takes a village. And this all came together for you, and that's what this sport is all about, isn't it?
Yes. Yes, no question. And this, the mare herself, Believe You Can, came from fairly humble beginning. She was a filly that we couldn't get sold here at Keeneland September, filly we always liked and we believed in. And that was very much, that's very much been Dad's model for all these years, is take horses up there, and if you believe in them, put what you think is a fair reserve, and if you don't get it, then be willing to race the horse. And so she really was the embodiment of that. She was a filly we absolutely loved as a yearling. The market didn't like her as much as we did, and instead of just cutting her loose and wishing somebody else good luck, Dad said, no, let's put a fair reserve on her, but if we don't get it, we'll probably be the happiest people in this building.
Do you remember the day that this colt was born?
Yes. Yes, of course. Yeah, you remember the ones like that, and he was one that, you've got so many nerves coming up to the foaling. The mare's getting close, she's waxing up, she's walking the field, and the baby is hopefully imminent, and this was one that just as soon as he came out, there's that sigh of relief, and then there's the wow, this is a pretty nice colt, and then as you watch him develop, and the weeks turn to months, and he just got better and better, and we really had been saying for really a long, long time that this horse could be the best horse that Dad had ever bred, and just he never gave us any reason to back up from that idea.
Well, if I'm not mistaken, Brett, I think at that time when hip number 258 exited the ring, he was at least the session topper. Was he the sale topper at that point?
I think he was the sale topper for about about 6.5 minutes, and then Barbara Banky's colt came in there and went to 4.1, and then Fred Mitchell's and the Mitchell family's filly at 8.2 just obviously blew everybody out of the water. And you talk about the feel good story of all time. It's the Mitchell family and what they've done with that mare. But I'm quite frankly, you'll chronicle that one pretty extensively too.
Yeah, no doubt about it. For people, Brett, that aren't familiar with the way this side of the business works, the breeding end of the business, talk about the effort that goes into raising these horses day in and day out.
Well, for the guys that are guys and girls that are in the barn, it's all consuming. I mean, it's. Every day they're in there doing absolutely everything they can to essentially keep these horses alive first and foremost, but then to keep them happy and to raise them the right way. And so when you think of how many man hours have gone into getting that horse into the sales ring, and you know, and all of these yearlings along the way give you so many different headaches and different problems and, you know, basically what can go wrong often does go wrong. And you just, when you've done it for that long, you realize how incredible a feat it is to have a colt that really never had any of those days. And how lucky you have to get to have, a horse with that breeding to be that lucky. But, you know, that you put yourselves in a position to be lucky when you surround yourself with good people and have good people raising your horses. And we're very lucky at Airdrie that we do.
Yeah, very much so. Brett Jones, our industry star of the week, Airdrie stud, his dad, Brereton, Cormac, Brennick, all the entire team there just does a phenomenal job, as you heard Brett lay out. And Brett, again, can't thank you enough for the visit here. Congratulations on this honor. It really does go to the entire team at Airdrie Stud and to that Warfront colt who was so special this past Tuesday. And before I let you go, one other note of congratulations. You are now the vice chairman of the Breeders' Cup, so congratulations.
Well, thank you very much. It's a... I've been working with the Breeders' Cup now for a long time. It's a very special organization to me, and I think a very important, as important as any organization in the industry. So vice chairman, I don't believe there are going to be any assassination attempts on Fred Hertrich's life. So I don't know how much my responsibilities change, but it was certainly a nice honor, and I just look forward to doing, helping the Breeders' Cup do all the important things that they do on a daily basis.
Brett, keep it rolling. Good luck with the rest of the sale, and say hello to Mom and Dad for me.
Will do, Mike. Thanks so much for having me.
All right.
Take care, bye.
Brett Jones here on HRRN. Again, Airdrie Stud, what a job they do. Just remarkable. And he is our industry star of the week. This segment brought to you by Stuart Morris. Stuart offering a boutique full-service bloodstock operation. And yeah, he wants to thank his owners, his clients, and his team. His success is because of you, and he knows it. With multiple stakes horses over the past 3 years, including Henley's Joy, Our Brain Trust, and Malagasy, Stuart is your source for success at the highest levels. You can visit the Stuart Morris consignment at all of the major sales. Second half of the program begins with Sean Byrne, who is the director of the Equine Industry Program at the University of Louisville. He'll join me momentarily. Ed DeRosa from Briss and Twin Spire is going to be with me at 9:20 Eastern to talk about the big races at Churchill Downs. And we'll handicap the races at Woodbine this weekend with Jeff Bratt, who is the handicapper at that racetrack north of the border. Back with hour number two and Sean Byrne right after we pause 10 seconds for station identification. This is the Horse Racing Radio Network.
From the rail to your radio, this is the Horse Racing Radio Network.
Jovia fights on. Tacitus is there. And then Tats between horses. Master Fencer on the far outside. They're coming to the finish. And Sir Winston has won the Belmont Stakes.
There's an eighth of a mile to go. Bolo keeps on going. River Boyne on the inside. Catapult far outside. Bowie Zero. But Bolo has something left for the final 16th. And it's going to be Bolo coast to coast in the Shoemaker Mile.
From our Jimmy Johns of Lexington studios, welcome to the Equine Forum, presented by Red Brand Fence.
Mucho Gusto trying so hard to go by. Maximum Security just in front. Mucho Gusto valiant, but Maximum Security has won the TVG.com Haskell Invitational.
Stride to stride, a long to run. One bad boy. One bad boy. Never looked better. And has got the Queen's Plate well and truly won.
Now, here's Mike Pena.
Welcome back. Hour number two of the Equine Forum, presented by Red Brand Fence. Rolling on. It's been a busy show so far. We've covered a lot of ground. Got a chance to talk to Matt Haggerty in the first half of the program. Matt with the Daily Racing Forum. He has been the man covering the Justify story and has done it very, very well. You can go back and read his articles on the Daily Racing Forum to get caught up, or go back and listen to that interview with our podcast later this morning after we finish up at 10 o'clock Eastern. Dale Romans was with me as well in the first half of the show, talking about the exciting Dennis's Moment in today's Iroquois. And then, as you just heard moments ago, Brett Jones of Airdrie Stud. If you missed any portion of the show, all you have to do is go back to our website. That's horseracingradio.net. You can check out the podcast of this show and all of our shows at your leisure, horseracingradio.net. Poll question at HRN on Twitter. Who is your best bet of the day on this Saturday afternoon? Could be from any track, could be from any race. Just want to hear from you, HRN Nation. Who is your best bet of the day on this Saturday afternoon? I'll try to pass along the results of that poll question later on in the program. Sean Byrne is the director of the Equine Industry Program at the University of Louisville. And you talk about an organization that does a tremendous job. Sean Byrne could very easily have been named our Industry Star of the Week on this Saturday morning. The entire team at the U of L Industry Program, just top-notch, second to none. And they have an exciting lecture program coming up over the next couple of months. They'll have three different lectures focusing on different parts of the industry, different segments of the game. And Sean is with us now on this Saturday morning to fill us in on all the details. Sean, good morning.
Hey, Mike. Good morning. How are you?
Things are great, my friend. How about yourself?
Doing wonderful. Can I chime in on the poll?
Go for it.
I like Morning Gold today in the Pocahontas at Churchill. I thought she ran a bang-up race last time out of Saratoga, winning off by five and change. And Kenny's back on his home turf, and I think 3-1 with Jose Ortiz. I don't think you're going to get 3-1, but she looks pretty solid today in the Pocahontas.
Is this one of those five-star bet the farm, if you got two farms, bet them both type of play?
No, no. Just personal opinion. Just a personal opinion, that's all.
All right, well, there you go. I'm in. We'll see how she can fare today in the Pocahontas. I mentioned this lecture series, Sean. Just going to be a lot of fun over the next couple of months. Tell me about it.
Yeah, we're really excited, Mike. We put together these panels, and, you know, I think you and I have talked on it off air about how racing is not doing a really good job of telling the good things that we are doing. And part of what we wanted to do is we wanted to put a spotlight on some topical issues in the industry, bring panelists together, not only to present this type of information to our students, but our alumni, people in the area that might be interested, and also the media. And I think we hit on some really good topics. The first one we're going to have is this coming Wednesday, and it's called The Business of the Racetrack Surfaces. Mick Peterson's going to make the drive over from UK, and he's going to discuss the science of taking care of the racetrack. Jamie Richardson's going to be here from Churchill Downs, and he's going to talk about maintaining a turf course and a dirt course. And the entire focus of this is a real positive one, Mike. We're not trying to take a look at the negative things that happened out at Santa Anita. It's all the good things that racing is doing on behalf of the health, safety, and welfare of the horse, the three most important things in our business right now. And then Chip Bock's going to come down from Turfway Park. He's going to replace Michael Dickinson, who originally was going to talk to us about Tapeta. Well, Chip Bock's got a lot of experience with polytrack and synthetic surfaces. So we're going to bring all three of these guys together, and then Jim Mulvihill from Churchill Downs is going to moderate the panel for us. And I expect to have some very entertaining and lively conversation, hopefully some good questions from the students. We've got some satellite sites coming in. I think Western Kentucky, Midway, Murray are all going to be listening and watching, because we're going to be streaming this through our friends at Horse Racing Nation. And we're really excited about that first panel.
Well, and you should be. And the cool thing about that, Sean, is that you have people from all different facets. So the conversation can come from a lot of different directions. And to me, you talk about promoting the positives and the good things that are going on with the sport. Everybody's going to have their take on the different surfaces they work with. And that can only be a positive.
Yeah, absolutely. And then after we finish that one up, we're going to come back on October 9th. And I really wanted to put a fun one in here. And Tom Durkin's a personal friend and also somebody I greatly admire. And when I was calling races, I wanted to be Tom Durkin. And Tom's going to come in, and we're going to just do like story night with Tom Durkin on October 9th. And I'm just going to introduce him and cut him loose for an hour and 15 minutes and let him talk to the students and talk about his career and all the things that he's done in this sport. And then we're going to wrap it up with another really big topical issue coming up in November, and that's the integration of sports wagering and horse racing. I've got three really good panelists lined up. I kind of took the approach of the old, the new, and somebody who really would like to have sports wagering at some point in time. So I've got Bill Knopf coming in from New Jersey. Of course, they're probably the pioneers in this right now, as they started sports wagering a little over about a year and a half ago, and they really work hard to integrate it in their actual building with live racing. John Walsh is going to come down from Hawthorne Racecourse. They're just in the process right now of launching sports wagering. And then finally, I'm going to have Representative Adam Kenning from Northern Kentucky, and he's up in the Florence area. He's District 69. He's going to put a bill in Kentucky in the spring session to bring in sports wagering. And what's interesting about all these, Mike, is all three of these sites or locations, states as you were, they all are bringing in sports wagering with the thought of somehow tying it in to horse racing and helping horse racing. And so that's what I really wanted to focus on in that panel. I don't have a moderator yet. I think I might end up doing that one myself, but we'll see. But that's kind of the fall series that we put together, and I can't tell you how excited we are to be able to do this and give it a try and throw it out there for the students, give them an opportunity to get exposed to all this.
Yeah, you should be excited. And just to recap, Sean, September 18th, 4 days from now, is going to be the first panel. That will be the discussion on the business of racing surfaces. October 9th,
right.
Tom Durkin will be there to tell his stories, and that's one. If you want an entertaining evening, do not miss that one on October 9th. And then November 13th, the sports betting panel, which I think should be fascinating. I think there's going to be a lot of really interesting things to come out of that panel, too.
Yeah, I agree. And again, we're going to be streaming these live on Horse Racing Nation. And we're also, they're also going to record them, and you'll be able to go back and watch them after the fact.
So good.
If you can't make it, we'd love to have you here. But if you can't make it, it is available, and we're going to record these so people can watch them. And again, I really wanted to put a positive light on the good things that the industry is trying to do, Mike. You know, too often we get caught up in all the negatives like we've talked about. And racing really is doing a lot of good things. If you go back and look, especially with like this racetrack surface issue, you know, the fatality rate in 2009 was well over 2. And now we're down to 1.68. That's still too high, but it's way better than it was, you know, and we're coming off some great things like what happened at Colonial Downs in Del Mar with no fatalities. Churchill's last meet had a really low number for them. And of course, one is too many, but still it's way better than it's been. So I really want to focus on what everybody's doing to protect our, not only our equine athletes, but our human athletes too.
Visiting with Sean Byrne, the director of the Equine Industry Program at the University of Louisville. If you can't tell, he is passionate about this sport, and that's because he spent pretty much his entire life in the sport of thoroughbred racing. And Sean, it's interesting. You mentioned being an announcer and calling races and wanting to end up being Tom Durkin. Well, I grew up in Western Massachusetts, so we would get the NYRA replay show every single night on the television, and I would, you know, religiously watch that. If I couldn't watch it, I would record it on my VCR, and I'd pop the tape in later and go back and watch it. But I also wanted to be a track announcer. That was my dream job. And Tom Durkin was somebody that I grew up following and thinking, okay, if I can just do what he does, then I'll be okay. That was much easier said than done, let me tell you.
Well, I was fortunate enough to call about 12,000 races, and to this day, I still miss it. I love that creative process. I like going upstairs, closing the door, and really just trying to let fans know what's going on in the course of a horse race. But I have a wonderful story with Tom. When I was my first year, I was calling races. This was back in 1994. I was invited to All Star Announcers Day up at Belmont Park and it was the inaugural one. The day before the Breeders' Cup, they brought announcers in from all over the country, and I wish the Breeders' Cup would bring that back, but. It's the day before the Breeders' Cup, and I got the opportunity. I was a nervous wreck. My mom helped me pay for the ticket up to New York because they couldn't pay for it. I flew in that morning, stood out on the apron, and then it was my time to go up, and I think I followed Dave Johnson. And Tom couldn't have been more gracious and helpful and just, you know, what do you need? What can I do to help? and he was just very supportive. And of course, I had a 12-horse field going 6 furlongs, and they went 43 and change. And being in a small racetrack like I was at, I never saw horses go 43 and change.
Yeah,
for the half mile. So, but no, Tom was wonderful, and I have the ultimate respect for Tom to this day, and he's always been kind to me and supportive.
You know, I can remember one of the first times that I met Tom Durkin in his booth at Belmont Park. I finally got up the courage to tell him that my dream job growing up was to be a track announcer, and that he was one of the people that I looked up to and idolized. And I can remember he paused for a second, and in true Tom Durkin fashion, he said, "Michael, you might want to set that bar a little higher." Yeah, he was very humble about
exactly
me.
Like Tom.
Yeah, about me telling him that he was kind of the one I was aspiring to be. But yeah, great stuff. And now we're blessed with a guy like Larry Colmus, who does a phenomenal job, and so many young announcers across the country. And that panel is going to be outstanding, Sean. And all three of those panels should be extremely interesting. Congratulations to you and the team at U of L for putting those together.
Thanks, Mike. We're going to try it again next fall. I don't want to do we wanted to take a shot this fall. This is my first full year here, my first fall, and we wanted to do something that would, you know, it's important for the program here to be a center point for not only research from the economic side of the business, but also, you know, I think it's important for us to tell the good stories and bring people together for discussion. And I have some other ideas, but I thought, you know, maybe we'll bring those in next year. But I thought these three topics right now really give our students a wide scope of things to look at, to discuss, and, you know, also entertain. You know, part of it's entertainment too.
Yeah, no doubt about it. Sean Byrne, director of the University of Louisville Equine Industry Program. Sean, really appreciate the visit this morning. Like all of our guests, we're going to send you a gift courtesy of Embrace the Race, the apparel for the horse racing lifestyle. We'll get that to you, and keep the ball rolling. Keep up the great work over there at U of L.
Thanks, Mike. Same to you guys, too. I'm a big fan of HRRN. I was listening to the call-in show on my way into work this morning.
That's dedication right there. Appreciate it, Sean.
All right. Talk to you later.
Thanks, buddy. Hey, don't forget that you can have the latest industry news and analysis, all the sales news, whatever it is, plus entries, results, race replay videos, and more at your fingertips with the Blood Horse Daily app for your phone, updated throughout the day or delivered daily in an email. You can also listen to the news on your Alexa device, and all of those are free. Go to bloodhorse.com/daily to download the app or sign up for the daily email. When I come back, I'm going to be joined by Ed DeRosa from Brisnet and Twin Spires. He'll take a look at the big races at Churchill Downs today and hopefully give you a winner or two. This is the Equine Forum on HRRN, presented by Red Brand Fence, manufacturing the V-mesh and non-climb fence you see on horse farms worldwide.
Hello, I'm Michael Blowen, founder of Old Friends Thoroughbred Retirement Farm. One of our highest priorities for these living legends is safety. That's why the fence we trust most at Old Friends is the V-Mesh Keepsake from Red Brand. Keepsake features a V-Mesh weave to prevent hooves from getting caught, and the mesh design flexes on impact. Learn more about the quality, safety, and long-lasting value of Keepsake V-Mesh Horse Fence by visiting redbrand.com.
Visionary design, visceral performance, and imaginary technology. That's Lexus. When every detail, every moment, and every emotion is crafted by Lexus, it leads to amazing. Experience artistry that inspires, design that compels, and engineering that excites. This is Mike Penna, and I can tell you personally, as a Lexus owner, the enjoyment you'll experience from driving any of the Lexus model lines is unparalleled. Visit the Lexus store of Lexington today and see what I've been talking about for nearly 15 years. The people truly make the difference. Lexus has also been a longtime supporter of the horse industry, with a Keeneland shop located at the Lexus store of Lexington and through their sponsorship of Keeneland's Lexus Raven Run Stakes each fall. And remember, when you go to the Lexus store, ask for the Godfather, Tony Attiano. Talk horses and experience amazing in your brand new Lexus.
Join us at Hollywood Casino at Charlestown Races on Saturday, September 21st for the 11th annual Race for the Ribbon. Another stellar card in store. 8 stakes races worth over $700,000 and headlined by the Grade 3 $300,000 Charlestown Oaks. And proceeds from the evening will go towards the fight against breast cancer here in West Virginia. The action kicks off with a special first post time of 5 p.m. Eastern. It's the Race for the Ribbon and the Grade 3 Charlestown Oaks here at Hollywood Casino at Charlestown Races.
Grade 1 winner and track record setter Lee. He traveled the world competing against the best of his generation. Now his progeny are hitting the track. His first winners include Saratoga standout Vass, with juveniles selling for over $400,000 and yearlings bringing up to $650,000. The sky is the limit for this promising young stallion. Lee, standing at Claiborne Farm.
The National HBPA is a coalition of over 30 individual affiliates in the United States and Canada, comprised of thousands of thoroughbred owners, trainers, and breeders, committed to the positive future of thoroughbred racing while working to increase its popularity and uphold the highest standards of welfare and integrity. Stop by to visit CEO Eric Hamelback at the National HBPA headquarters in Lexington, Kentucky, and see what the HBPA is doing for you.
Hello, I'm Junior Alvarado, and I listen to HRRN.
You're listening to the Equine Forum on the Horse Racing Radio Network, presented by Red Brand Fence.
Up and Pavlovol is in third. Elena strikes his feet now. She's back to fourth. Racing inside the final furlong and a half. Stonetastic strike. Goes for home. Milam towards the inside. Down the outside. Untappable continues to surge. Stonetastic needs the line. Untappable on the outside. Untappable to win the Pocahontas. A second win in the Pocahontas for both Steve Asmussen and Rosina Pravnik as Untappable breaks the heart of Stonetastic in the drive for line to win the Pocahontas.
Mike Penna, Baron of the Backstretch, back with you on the Equine Forum, presented by Red Brand Fence. Mark Johnson with the call of the 2013 running of the Pocahontas at Churchill Downs. Untappable for Steve Asmussen getting the victory. That was Steve's second victory in the race. He'll be looking for number three later this afternoon with Lada Ott. If he can win his third Pocahontas Stakes, he'll join Dale Romans, Hall of Famer Dwayne Lucas, and Pete Vestal as trainers who have saddled three winners in the race. And you have to think he has a pretty good chance later this afternoon. It's a stellar card at Churchill Downs. And to help us figure it all out now is our good friend Ed DeRosa. You can catch him every Thursday night on our BristNet.com call-in show with Anthony Stabile here on the Horse Racing Radio Network. And you can catch him on BristNet and at Twin Spires. He wears a lot of hats and he does them very well. I call him the Duke of Degeneracy. Duke, what's up?
What's going on? Yeah, big day at Churchill. And I have to tell you, Mike, and for those listening especially, that call-in show, other than you marrying Michelle, I think that might be your greatest conception ever.
Yeah, I'll tell you what.
We have a lot of fun on there.
A lot of fun. And, you know, Sean Byrne from the U of L industry program was just with me in the last segment. He said he was listening to the podcast of the show driving in this morning. So we receive a lot of great feedback on it. I know you guys are always busy with phone calls every Thursday night. And I'll just throw in a shameless plug. 6 to 7 Eastern, Sirius 219, XM 201, and, of course, streaming at horseracingradio.net is where you can catch the BristNet call-in show.
Yeah, do it. We have fun and welcome calls, and as you said, the podcast as well. I know people catch it, so glad to be a part of the HRN team. You guys do a great job.
Yeah, thank you, buddy, and glad to have you on board. Sorry you didn't have anything to talk about on the show this week, though.
Well, that's why I did do the plug. I knew you needed to fill some time.
Yeah, I appreciate it. 11 races on that card at Churchill today, and you have the 4 stakes races, including the 2 win in your in events for the Breeders' Cup. And then, you know, you look ahead to the road to the Kentucky Derby. That really begins later this afternoon, too.
Yeah, I'm certainly of the school. It's never too early to be thinking Derby. This really gets it going in earnest, though, as we've seen, really since the point system has come into play. Every point matters when you're fighting for that 20th spot. So 10 to the winner in the Iroquois today, and then 4-2-1. And it definitely matters. So obviously the purse is nice, getting that berth in the Breeders' Cup Juvenile, especially nice, and getting on the points board. It's a talking point. It means something to the breeders. It's really important to the industry in general. And kicking off 2020 Derby in earnest today, I'm really excited to be a part of it.
231 days, 9 hours, 25 minutes, and now just 37 seconds away from the first Saturday in May 2020.
And it's going to be sunny next year, I'm told.
Sunny and 75, right?
That's right. Yep.
As John Asher would say. Yeah, the long-range forecast calling for a beautiful day on Derby Day. And hey, why not? All right, where do you want to start, Duke? I'll leave it up to you. You want to walk through the big races, the greatest stakes first, or you want to take it with maybe the open mind and go all the way through?
Yeah, I mean, since it's the greatest stakes, bang, 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 I say start in sequential order with the open mind. If that's all right?
Let's do it. Race number 7, 3:48 Eastern is the post, 6 furlongs on the main track.
And I'd say this is the race probably most competitive of the four stakes races, in that I have a hard time really tossing any horse. Meadow Dance, for instance, I probably had the least interest in paper handicapping. But, of course, you never really could throw out Cox and Bridge Mahan in Kentucky anyway. But this filly got a big work from Bruno. So she's maybe sitting on an improved performance. So kick off that pick five. I'm not looking to get too narrow in the open mind. But Upset Brewing at 12-1 is my top pick. Why not, if I think it's a competitive race, take a horse at a big price? Buff Bradley, one of two in here for him. Divine Queen's the shorter price, but we all know that trainers don't mind popping with their bigger prices at times. And I just think this one coming out of that 6-furlong Ellis race, pure sprinter, and I think there's enough speed in here that if Gabe works out the right trip, can pick up some pieces that maybe the longest shot on the board.
Yeah, you know, and she's a daughter of Justin Phillip, who stands out at Castleton Lions, and she is very, very talented. The problem, I think, with her, Ed, and correct me if I'm wrong, she tends to finish second a lot. She's had 25 starts, 3 wins, 11 seconds, and she's been second 5 of her 8 starts at Churchill Downs. What makes you think she gets over that hump today?
I would say the big factor would be I'm willing to take a shot with the price. I think that's a good point to make. And, you know, when you're talking about horses, you take money, 2-3-1, even favored, that have secondaitis, that does kind of gnaw at you. But it's maybe the biggest price in the race. That was why I was considering giving her another shot at the win. And just looking at the races she's been in, granted this is a stake now, but those optional claimer high-level allowance races usually draw stakes-quality fields. So the fact that she's shown she's competitive among those kind of groups, and you're still going to get a horse who could pay $20, $25 if she wins, is enough for me.
Yeah, good point. The Grade 3 Locust Grove will follow that race. It's race number 8, 1/16, and it's a field of 9. And here you go. You talk about a morning line that's pretty well balanced. This is another race that you could go a lot of different directions, isn't it?
You can. And from a wagering standpoint, parimutuel game, I'm going to plant my flag and go in one specific direction. I think with so many people likely singling Dennis's Moment in the Iroquois, they may be inclined to say, oh, well, in the Locust Grove, I can cover my bases with the obvious choices. And it really is hard to separate My Lady Curlin, Escape Clause, and Go Google Yourself. But because I am wanting to go deep in the open mind, and if I'm going to hit a big ticket, it's going to take Beating Dennis's Moment to do it. This is going to be a spot where I actually single, and My Lady Curlin is my preference of the three obvious choices. Soft spot in my heart because she didn't win a stakes race at Thistledown, so I love to see that. But looks like Escape Clause is going to be the speed, and My Lady Curlin stalk and pounce trip under Bridgemo. And she got the better of Escape Clause at Thistle, and think we could see a repeat situation here.
Yeah, and should be a legit price, pretty solid price anyway, in that Locust Grove. How about the Pocahontas? How'd you see that with the 2-year-old girls?
Well, I was really actually pretty keen on British Idiom, another Cox horse. But James Scully texted a bit ago to say that she is coming out.
Okay.
So that's a pretty significant scratch because she was a pace threat. But I did like Kenny McPeak's filly a bit too, Morning Gold. And she's making her dirt debut, which is pretty rare for two-year-olds in stakes races. Usually they have to start out in a dirt race, but I'm seeing it as a big positive that Kenny wanted to get this filly an 8.5 trip right out of the box. She probably likes the distance. And if you're a two-year-old, typically you're going to have to go to turf if you want to start at a route. So that's what Kenny did, got her a win, a big win, up at Saratoga, now comes here in dirt. And there's no reason to think, being by morning line out of an Indian Charlie mare, that she won't be able to handle this middle distance trip on the dirt. So I thought the win last time was big. I thought the biggest competition to her was British Idiom, who's out now. And Portrait, I'm going to try to fade, Mike. I know the big win sticks out at Ellis, pretty scintillating. Number didn't come back as fast as you would expect for that type of big win. Brisnet says Morning Gold was faster on the turf, so if that transfers to dirt, I think we're going to get the right price on her.
Yeah, you know, as I came back from the commercial break, we had that clip of Untappable for Steve Asmussen winning, and Steve trying to equal Dale Romans, Wayne Lucas, and Pete Vestal with three wins in the Pocahontas. Ken McPeak's in that same boat. He won this race in 2015 with Dothraki Queen and then came back the following year with Daddy's Little Darling. So Kenny's looking for that third win, and that would tie the trainer record as well. So, you know, it's hard to go against a guy like Ken McPeak, especially in a race like this, and especially when you're going to get a decent price.
Yeah, and Ken McPeak, a lifetime positive ROI, the September meet in Churchill, which started in 2013. So this is clearly a meet he points for. And if I'm not mistaken, I don't know what they did before they won the Pocahontas, but I do believe both those winners you mentioned ran on turf at some point. So Kenny seems to have a pulse for these versatile two-year-olds and getting them to the winner's circle in a race like this. So
yeah, that sounds right.
Even more reason to be on Morning Gold. And real quick, I'll give a quick note to Shadily, 10-1 on the morning line, down on the rail for Maker. Mike's one of the sharpest claimers there is, especially at those high-level claiming, $50,000, $75,000 tag. I'm guessing Pletcher was hoping he wouldn't lose this filly, but he did. Now stretches out, first time for Maker. Certainly like that she gets the rail, and she's my second pick at 10-1.
All right, and that race is going to be followed by the other win in your in, the Grade 3 Iroquois, this one for the two-year-old boys, win in your in for the Breeders' Cup Juvenile, and again, a points race for next year's Kentucky Derby. Big field, 1/16 on the main track. Dennis's Moment going to take a lot of money off of that huge maiden win, winning by 19 lengths. Dale Romans was on the show earlier, and we'll encourage people to go back to the website, listen to the podcast later if they missed it. But Dale said he knew from a very early stage in this horse's career that he was going to be special.
Yeah, I remember interviewing Dale on June 23rd, which was technically the debut. And, you know, Dale's pretty good about, you know, pumping people up and the trainer speak thing. But, you know, you're around these guys enough, you pick on the clues of, you know, when they really mean business. And it was pretty clear he was effervescent about this horse's chances, and fortunately didn't work out that day. But then at, you know, Ellis, we saw why Dale was so excited. And, you know, he said it, and I've heard it from the Morning Observers as well. This horse just has not missed anything. You know, a work, a gallop, coming into this race as well as you'd want, which all adds up to a really short price, Mike. And second out with the horse we know had trouble on debut, stretching out to 1/16, probably 4-5 at most. I am going to try to take a stand against. I just think we're going to get too high a price on some of these others, which kudos to the racing office for getting 9 to face Dennis's Moment.
Yeah.
It is a great at stakes. It is a points race. It is winning your end. But still, with him looming so large, to get this competitive field is really awesome. Let me know is my top pick. I was there at Ellis. I liked him that day at 3-1, and he just had some trouble early. Then he got shuffled back, just didn't seem comfortable after the break. But once he got going, he was going. And I think if Burrell works out a trip at Churchill, which we know few are better at that than he, I think 10-1 is the right price to take a shot that this horse can improve again. Two turns, twirling candy out of Mizzen Mast. That certainly augurs well for the added distance. And just think, Ian had this race in mind for a while, and we're getting the right price to find out if he's good enough.
Visiting with Ed DeRosa from Brisnet and Twin Spires here on the Horse Racing Radio Network, the Duke of Degeneracy in full throttle here this morning, handicapping the big graded stakes at Churchill Downs later today. Let me know, 10-1 on the morning line for Ian Wilkes under Calvin Burrell, the Duke's top pick in the Iroquois. And hey, why not take a shot against that big favorite? You know, it's interesting, Ed, that we're talking about these two horses, both Ellis Park-based horses. That two-year-old program now at Ellis Park, these horses coming out of there, they're legit. They can run.
They are. We saw a few ship into Kentucky Downs, and that's the other thing with the program there. It's dirt, it's turf. We're seeing them stretch out. Again, the renaissance in Kentucky it's always been the focal point of most people's efforts in the racing industry. But to see the other tracks, you know, get these horses to meets like Churchill and Keeneland and perform well is really exciting to be a part of it here in the Bluegrass.
What do we do with a horse first time after changing his name?
That's pretty rare.
That's a different angle.
Yeah, no, and, you know, the jockey club's pretty strict about once you've raced, that's your name. In this case, an exception was made. The one for those listening, you know, could be tricky because if you look in the running lines of the PPs,
yeah,
you'll see that he's listed by his former name, which is still what appears in the chart, and that's Noose. And I was there when he broke his maiden, and it was as Corey pleased. And the fact that this one came back in a Saratoga two-year-old race and was 2.3-1, that's some pretty big money for Saratoga on a shipper in from Churchill. But he did improve speed rating-wise, and I do see him as dangerous here. But he was 5-1, I think, was the third choice on the line. So just kind of thought, well, if I'm going to go against Dennis's moment, I'm going to take a bigger swing than that. But he's one of the reasons that this is easily one of the better two-year-old stakes races I can remember in some time at this meet.
Yeah, absolutely. And that is number three, Scabbard, who, as Ed alluded to, was previously named Noose for his first two starts. They changed it to Scabbard, and Eddie Keneally sends out Scabbard under Corey Lannery. And Ed, as you know, I'm a huge fan of those late pace numbers that you can find in the Brisnet past performances. I've done very well following those. And Scabbard stacks up quite nicely with the rest of the group. And I think his pedigree, too, More Than Ready out of a Gone West mare, kind of fits this mile and a 16th. The two starts under his belt, he could be a little dangerous here this afternoon.
Yeah, well, no, and you get Corey Lannery, who, you know, speaking to jockeys, you know how to work a trip. As I mentioned with Burrell, Lannery probably has even usurped him in terms of finding a seam on the rail, which could be beneficial here because he is a closer, so... yeah, other than if, you know, in a situation where people are like, well, I like Dennis's moment and, you know, some other horse, you know, maybe I'd say, well, if you like Dennis's moment, just bet your horse. And if you don't, go against them. But there's not many in here I talk people off if you're trying to beat the favorite.
All right, Duke, less than a minute. Fill people in on what they can expect if they go to Briss and Twin Spires later today.
Yeah, brisnet.com/Churchill has all of your handicapping reports for today, including Bruno, which I referenced earlier. Gus Alonso has some spotlight selections, not only for Churchill, but also Woodbine, which I know throughout the show you've pumped up their big day today. And I'll say I love Starship Jubilee. I think today's finally the day for her up at Woodbine. And if you go to twinspires.com/offers, have some great promos on playing the Iroquois and Pocahontas and getting a free future wager when that comes around.
All right, there you go. He is Ed DeRosa. You can catch him every Thursday night on our Brisnet.com call-in show, 6 to 7 Eastern here on the network. Ed, as always, man, appreciate the visit. We'll get you your gift courtesy of Embrace the Race, and we'll talk to you soon.
My pleasure. Have a good day, everyone.
All right, Ed DeRosa here on HRRN. Again, our poll question, at HRN, on Twitter, what is your best bet of the day? Great racing across the country today. Several people weighing in. We have our good friend El Potro Roberto saying Octava in the sixth at Belmont Park. Escape Clause, another vote for Escape Clause. You have Competition of Ideas at Woodbine. in the Canadian Stakes. And then you have Pink Lloyd, the outstanding Canadian horse. Make sure you cast your vote now at HRN on Twitter, Horse Racing Radio Network on Facebook. Who is your best bet of the day? We're going to find out who Jeff Bratt, the handicapper at Woodbine, likes on their program today and in the two-year-old races tomorrow. That's next on the Equine Forum on HRRN, your home for the Breeders' Cup.
Castleton Lions is proud to introduce precocious multiple graded stakes winner Protonico for the 2019 breeding season. A Son of Giants Causeway out of an AP Indy mare, Protonico rolled to a 12 3/4 length victory in his debut as a 2-year-old before taking the Grade 3 Smarty Jones and Grade 3 Discovery Handicap at 3, followed by an ultra game win in the Grade 2 Ali Sheba at Churchill Downs in his 4-year-old season. Protonico joins the Castleton Lions stallion roster that includes multiple Eclipse champion Gio Ponti and Blue Blood sprinter Justin Phillip. Gio Ponti is the sire of Eclipse champion Dre Fong, Canadian Classic winner Sir Dudley Diggs, and stakes winners Miss Technicality and America's Tale. While Justin Phillip is represented by exciting stakes-winning filly Safe to Say and stakes place runners Justaholic, Blushing Justine, and Upset Brewing. Protonico, Gio Ponti, and Justin Phillip standing at Castleton Lions.
Attending this year's Kentucky Derby? Experience the true difference at the official Derby Hotel of HRRN. Say hello to a brand new hotel experience from Hilton. That's vibrant, affordable, and young at heart. It's energetic, yet relaxing and comfortable. It's completely unprecedented. It's completely true. Enjoy modern amenities and quality comfort with guest rooms featuring a 55-inch flat-screen TV and 150 channels of DirecTV, along with a free breakfast, a state-of-the-art fitness center, and more. Discover affordability without compromise at Louisville's True by Hilton.
Picari Bloodstock is consistently among the top consigners at major sales. In addition to selling a million-dollar-plus yearling, Picari's standouts on the racetrack include Reynaldo the Wizard.
Coming after Reynaldo the Wizard, he's still in front of the Wizard, and he's won! Reynaldo the Wizard has beaten Belmont Mask.
And recent Grade 1 winner, Salty.
Here comes Salty down inside to grab the lead, and Salty has won it!
Visit the Picari Bloodstock consignment at major sales to find your next superstar.
Adina Springs Stallion, Ghost Zapper, the consistently brilliant sire of 11% black type winners, including Breeders' Cup champion and Eclipse champion female sprinter, Judy the Beauty.
Judy the Beauty! Judy the Beauty! One and a head and I thrill it!
Santa Anita Handicap winner, Shaman Ghost.
It's Shaman Ghost, an overwhelming force in the last 16th of a mile.
And Whitney Handicap hero, Moreno.
100 yards from home, and it's Moreno! Moreno to win the Whitney in a wire-to-wire score!
Ghost Zapper's 2019 stars include millionaire champion Holy Helena and unbeaten Guarana, the number one three-year-old filly in North America.
Another impressive outing here! Guarana 2 for 2, and she's an Acorn winner!
Guarana has won the coaching club, American Oaks over Point of Honor.
Consistently brilliant, Ghost Zapper, standing at Adina Springs. Visit adinastallions.com.
I'm Manny Franco, and I listen to the Horse Racing Radio Network.
You're listening to the Equine Forum on the Horse Racing Radio Network, presented by Red Brand Fence.
Tippin trying to get clear here, fighting down the outside. Mr. Owen is running on. Tippin in front. They have a furlong to run, and she has turned them away. And she is going to make this her own personal playground. Tippin, Tippin going on to win the Rico Woodbine Mile. Finishing is Mondialis right down the outside from the back. Lancaster Bomber is there, but it is World Approval who slips away. World Approval in front, right down the outside. Finishing on is Mondialis and Lancaster Bomber. But World Approval wins the Rico Woodbine Mile by almost 3 lengths.
Robert Geller with the call of the 2016 and 2017 renewals of that Grade 1 Woodbine Mile. What do both of those horses have in common? Tepin and World Approval, both trained by Canadian Hall of Famer Mark Cassie, and he is back in the spotlight again this afternoon with his talented 4-year-old filly, Got Stormy, who figures to be the likely favorite in this afternoon's Woodbine Mile, at least among those favorites. She is very, very good. She beat the boys last time out in the Grade 1 4-star Dave at Saratoga, and that is all part of a tremendous card and a tremendous weekend, really, at Woodbine with great racing coming up this afternoon and tomorrow. All those greatest stakes, including the Woodbine Mile, later today. And to help us figure it all out is Jeff Bratt, who is the handicapper at Woodbine. He's the man who is responsible for picking a few winners north of the border and hoping to do it here with us this morning, too. Jeff, good morning.
Good morning, Mike. My favorite race of the year. The Queen's Plate is special, for sure, because it's Canada's most prestigious race. But as you said, this day and this weekend, it's turned out to be the who's who of thoroughbred racing, and it really has a bit of an international flair all weekend long as well.
And I think it helps, too, that you have the win in your in tag on these. So the Rico Woodbine Mile win in your in for the Breeders' Cup Mile. Then you have the two tomorrow, the Natama, the Summer Stakes for the Juveniles. You know, it's just, it makes for a tremendous and a very impactful weekend at Woodbine.
And I think one of the storylines has to be the fact that we got some rain last night, not as much as they were calling for. So I think the course will have a little bit of cut to it. The good news is the sun is shining right now, so it's going to get a chance to dry out a little bit. Now, the inside course that we have here at Woodbine, Mike, it drains so fast. It's probably going to be listed as firm. But I'm thinking, if I were to guess, I don't know for sure, maybe I'm thinking good, probably for the E.P. Taylor, but we'll have more information on that as we get closer towards post time.
All right. Well, you have 12 races scheduled for this afternoon. Where do you want to start? You want to start with the first of the greatest stakes, I guess, the Canadian?
Sure, let's go there, because it's not that often you get a representative from the Queen who's going to make an appearance, and whenever you see those silks, that's always a big deal here at Woodbine. So yeah, let's start with the Canadian Stakes. So the Queen's horse, Her Majesty's horse, is Magnetic Charm, who's going to get a shot here at Woodbine. And the big thing, Mike, with this horse is gets in with 110 pounds, so gets in really, really light. Now, Kazushi's a small guy. I don't know if he can tack 110 or not. They're going to be going to be interested to see exactly what the weight assignment's going to be with that one come post time. But I found one of the storylines for this race, Mike, the pace scenario in here. I don't know how much speed there is in here. Holy Helena likes to come from off the pace. She's obviously a bit of a fan favorite. I think Starship Jubilee is a little bit better coming from off the pace myself. I thought she ran great down at Saratoga. Competition of ideas, that's where I landed. I know it's not a really original pick in here, but you would think this drop down in class for her. I mean, she last ran the Beverly Dean. She ran well to finish third and against Sister Charlie and Awesome Tank.
How does this course typically play if you do get a little bit of cut in the ground, as you said,
yeah.
Jeff?
It tends to soften the speed a little bit, but the one thing that we do here at Woodbine is we really plan out where the portable rail positions are going to be all season long. So we've been in lane 4 and lane 5 for the last 2 or 3 weeks. So the inside territory is so good. If you can get to the inside, that turf course has not been used. That portion of the course hasn't been used for about a month. So that is more than anything, whether your running style is on the front end or coming from off the pace, if you can save ground and get to the rail where the course is not as cut up as, say, it would be in lane 4 or 5, that, to me, is the place to be.
When we talk about the Arlington Million program at Arlington Park every summer, we always talk about the fact that it's the first kind of true test where we start to see some of the Europeans come over and take on some of the top American runners. So
right.
In this case, you mentioned the international aspect of this day of racing, and you talked about Magnetic Charm, the Queen's horse. Is it kind of the same thing where we start to get a sense of, okay, how do some of the top Europeans fit with some of the top horses from America and from Canada?
Exactly, and I think this is kind of a bit of a test run for her to try and figure out where she fits in the mix of things locally. And the first thing that whenever I handicap races like this and I see the Euros, I always want to see if they go on to Lasix or not. And this horse is not going on to Lasix here today. And to try and figure out where she fits into the mix of things, you know, she ran competitively back in 2008 in Group 2 and Group 3 races, but she hasn't been able to pick up that elusive score yet. So I think they're trying to figure out exactly where she fits, and they'd love to get a real black-type score onto her resume, I would imagine, as well.
Yeah, and she's a 3-year-old facing older. I love the way the ownership is listed, though. As you said, owned by the Queen, and when you look at the ownership, it just says the Queen. Enough
right.
said.
You know you're a big deal when.
When you just say the Queen. Yeah, no doubt about it. All right, well, that's the Canadian. How about the Grade 1 Rico Woodbine Mile, which is race number 9, 5:42 Eastern is the post. Again, Mark Cassie back in the spotlight, but this is a really, really good renewal.
It is. And I'm going to toss the ball back into your court by asking you a question in here. How would you handicap God Storming here? So she obviously is coming off the race of her life in the four-star Dave. There's a quick comeback. I don't know if you're a believer in the bounce angle or a bit of a regression angle. I mean, is she just now hitting her peak? Is she a bet against here today? How would you handicap this race going in?
Well, I would normally say she's a bet against, and I think from a price perspective, she probably is a bet against in here, you know, from a horse player perspective. But, man, how do you go against Mark Cassie in these big races? I mean, obviously he knows that she's doing well or he's not going to put her in this race. That's, you know, that's really the conundrum. But I think from a pure handicapping horse player perspective, I think you have to play against Got Stormy and just hope that those things that you just laid out prove to be true.
And if she shows up and she runs a big race, I mean, obviously you're going to use her in multiple leg wagers and stuff like that. But from a win wagering point of view, she's probably a bet against in here because there are other horses in this race that are good prices in here. The locals are represented by Silent Poet. He's a bit of an interesting story. So Silent Poet, he was gelded at the end of last year, and since coming back, he's 2-for-2, and he beats a course record that it stood here at Woodbine for 15 years in that most recent race, set by Soaring Free. And he's actually going to be my selection in here. I might be going more with my heart than my head, but I really think he's an up-and-comer in this race. And the way that I envision this race unfolding, Mike, I just don't think there's a ton of pace in this race. I mean, American Guru and Silent Poet are owned by the same connection, so you would think that they're both not going to kill each other up front in this race. I think Raging Bull's one of the best horses in here, but how far off the pace is he going to be? And who's going to be able to handle a bit of a give to the turf course as well? So there's all kinds of dynamics when trying to handicap this race.
What do you think of Synchrony?
I like the way the horse ran at Woodbine. Last time out, got shuffled back, and still was able to come on to win. And you know they want to get that grade one win onto that one's card as well. I like Synchrony a little bit coming up in this race, too. I think that horse has got a shot. The one that I'm going to watch very closely on the tote board, and I don't know what your opinion is on this one, but a lot of buzz about Luke Cullen coming into this race, who missed all that time, and that was a gutsy win last time out in the Lure. Do you have that horse in the mix of things anywhere?
Well, you know, if Luke Cullen can run back to some of those performances in Great Estates Company from last year, I think you definitely have to go ahead and give him a look. He was so consistent. His numbers stacked up really well, and he's a horse that, you know, coming back off the long layoff now, making his third start in his form cycle, that bodes well too. And if he can continue to move forward, and, you know, and I say that with a horse that's won his last two starts this year, but if he can continue to move forward and keep developing, why not? And Kieran McLaughlin, you talk about somebody that's as sharp as they come, you know, he's right there with him.
Yeah, exactly. And then you have some others in this race that I think are probably a little bit overmatched, like an El Tormenta, Emmaus, Amorality Pier. A late entrant, one that was supplemented, was Made You Look, who got to the front in the four-star day, but then couldn't hold off all the challengers in there. You know, I like this race because I think you have horses coming from all kinds of different directions into the here. And again, the pace is going to be the real storyline for me early on in this event.
Talking with Jeff Bratt, he is the handicapper at Woodbine and doing a tremendous job here on the show, walking through the big races this afternoon. How about the Grade 1 Northern Dancer, which will go as race number 10, Jeff?
If you know the status of Old Persian, you've handicapped this race. Because if this is the Old Persian that we saw in Dubai, he wins for fun.
Yep.
But what has happened to him in his last couple of races? You know, in his last starts, if you get a chance to watch that replay, he had every chance to win on that day, and he eventually finished in the third-place position. He's got a lot of money in his bank card. Charlie Appleby, obviously, one of the best trainers in the world. But it's all about price. What type of price are you willing to take on a horse like this? And based on his current status, I'm going to go in a bit of a different direction in here. I'm going to go towards a horse for course that's really in good form, and this is Tis a Slam. Potentially, yeah, there could be a bit of a pace battle in here if Cooler Mike wants to show a little bit of speed. But Tis a Slam, he's developing into this real galloper where he gets the front and he'll just gallop horses into submission. And I think he's got a bit of a home field advantage at a price that's going to be a little bit more attractive than Old Persian.
Yeah, it could be very interesting to see. Again, a great program up at Woodbine later today. Tomorrow, more great racing, including two more winning your ins with the Summer and the Natalma Stakes. Only about a minute or so left here, Jeff, so we're going to have to kind of quickly do an overview and a preview of tomorrow's card. Tell us some of the highlights that people can look forward to.
Well, in the Summer Stakes, that's probably the most wide open of the Grade 1 races. And then the Natalma, you're going to have a heavy favorites in Fair Maiden, who could be any type for Godolphin, has won the last two races by a combined 25 lengths. So I think that Pletcher's got a good one in Mystic Lancelot in the Summer, but I'm going to go towards Please Call Me Back. And then we have a couple of 5-furlong sprints for 2-year-olds as well that it seemed to be wide open races on the program as well. If you like 2-year-old races, tomorrow's program is the one for you.
Yeah, this weekend of racing at Woodbine is just so, so good. And as you said, I love the Queen's Plate. We're there to broadcast it every year, and it's a special, special day. But this the quality of competition over these 2 days and the Breeders' Cup winning your in element, second to none, just sensational.
Yeah, Mike, and you guys have done a great job. I've had the pleasure of catching up with a bunch of your colleagues when you've come up here, and Jerry Olguin's a great guy. I know he's done some great work with you guys throughout the years as well, so you're always welcome. We love having you north of the border.
Well, Jeff, I appreciate it, and I appreciate the visit here this morning. Like all of our guests, we're going to get you a gift courtesy of Embrace the Race, the apparel for the horse racing lifestyle, and of course you can wear what you love at EmbraceTheRace.com. Appreciate it, Jeff. Enjoy the day, and good luck.
Thanks, Mike. Always a pleasure.
All right, Jeff Bratt here on the Horse Racing Radio Network. Going to get to one final break. We'll come back and tell you what's ahead here on the network. Stay with us. It's the Equine Forum on HRRN, presented by Red Brand Fence, manufacturing the V-Mesh and non-climb fence you see on horse farms worldwide. In the recent Flood Horse Market Watch study of leading consigners with more than 100 yearlings offered from 2014 to 2016, Millridge Sales ranked highest among percentage of stakes horses and winners of $100,000 or more. Since 2000, Millridge has raised or sold 34 Grade 1 winners, including 8 Breeders' Cup winners. Their consignment at this year's Keeneland September sale includes yearlings from deep families by leading stallions such as Candy Ride, Curlin, Empire Maker, Ghost Sapper, More Than Ready, Quality Road, and Uncle Mo. Millridge, raising and selling racehorses.
When it comes to buying tractors, mowers, and farm equipment, look no further than locally owned Central Equipment on Red Mile Road in Lexington. A third-generation family business, Central Equipment has been servicing the equine industry for more than 46 years, working closely with the NTRA to ensure their equine clients get the best pricing on their new John Deere purchases. At Central Equipment, you'll find top brands like Exmark, Kubota, Still, John Deere, and Woods. Stop in today and experience the family-owned atmosphere or visit centralequipment.com.
Airdrie Studs' Summer Front is poised to skyrocket to national sire prominence with his first crop of two-year-olds in 2019. A multiple stakes winner at two, this talented son of Warfront went on to win her place in 12 graded stakes with lifetime earnings of more than $1 million. With an explosive turn of foot, Summer Front routinely recorded times of a mile and 33 in some of the best Grade 1 mile races in the country and possesses everything it takes to be an important sire for years to come. Airdrie Studs' Summer Front. Think about it.
Woodford Feed, where tradition merges with technology. Family owned since 1940 and providing exceptional customer service, Woodford Feed specializes in the highest quality feed, using only the finest ingredients to ensure optimal nutrition for your horses. In addition, Woodford Feed can help with all your farm needs, including field seed, fertilizer, and weed control. So whether your horse is sprinting around the racetrack or has a foal by her side, count on Woodford Feed to provide the quality nutrition necessary to perform at the highest level. Woodford Feed, Versailles, Kentucky.
Tappet. His impact on the breed will last for generations. With more graded stakes winners, more Grade 1 winners, and more million-dollar yearlings than any other active American stallion. For owners and breeders, his progeny have created memories that will last a lifetime. Find your Tappet at the upcoming yearling sales. America's most dominant sire. Tappet, standing at Gainesway.
This is Florent Giroux, and you are listening to HRRN.
Well, my thanks to everyone who weighed in on the poll question this morning with your top selection of the day, your best bet of the day. And my thanks to all the guests who appeared to make this show possible, covered a lot of ground, started by talking about the situation surrounding Triple Crown winner Justify, did that with Matt Haggerty of the Daily Racing Forum in the first half of the show. Dale Romans was with me to talk about the exciting juvenile Dennis's Moment, who figures to be the favorite in this afternoon's Iroquois at Churchill Downs. Our industry star of the week, Brett Jones of Airdrie Stud and the entire Airdrie team, talking about their $2.9 million yearling they sold this past week at Keeneland. Sean Byrne, the director of the Equine Industry Program at the University of Louisville, was with me, spelling out their lecture series, which comes up over the next couple of months. And Ed DeRosa from Briss and Twin Spires, Jeff Bratt from Woodbine, just moments ago. If you missed any portion of the show, well, quite simple. All you have to do is head back to our website, horseracingradio.net. You can check out the podcast of this show and all of our shows at horseracingradio.net. Don't forget that you can join us every Wednesday, Thursday, and Friday afternoons from 3 to 7 Eastern Time for our Express Bet radio program with Anthony Stabile and Steve Grabowski. And you have Trainer Talk presented by Fasig Tipton on Wednesday nights, the BristNet.com call-in show on Thursday nights, and on Friday, the Weekend Stakes Preview presented by Naira Betts. All of that all week long here on HRN. Go to horseracingradio.net to see a complete schedule and visit us on social media at HRRN on Twitter, Horse Racing Radio Network on Facebook. Been a lot of fun. Back next week with another brand new edition of the Equine Forum. Thanks for listening, everybody. For my producer, Lee Delapina, and our Jimmy Johns of Lexington Studios. For Chauncey, Sean C., handling all the social media, I'm Mike Pena. Home opener for the Steelers this weekend. Go Steelers.